Bob, the situation as you described it is pretty darn intimidating. You're a high-time guy with a lot of experience. Might any pilot be pretty darn challenged by this scenario?
Well, I'll tell you what, Bob. I would be intimidated by it after, you know, flying a corporate jet and doing these kinds of arrivals for years. Doing this single pilot is not something I would look forward to. This fella is operating in a two-pilot environment, and he's learning on the job, in fact, here. This is an OJT situation for him. He hasn't done this before. He's trying to work it out alone in the cockpit. Tough assignment.
And the, you know, the truth of the matter is, okay, it's one thing to bust an altitude and, you know, and get a violation, but if you're in my airspace, you know, that could be a real safety issue, couldn't it?
This is probably one of the densest airspace areas in the nation. There are airplanes all over the place. And so many that I've seen TCAS overload at times, can't handle all the aircraft that it could see. That's how dense the airspace is.
Let's look at this pilot for a second. I mean, do we have a setup here? I mean, we got a highly successful guy, highly motivated guy, upgrading his airplane. Boy, this is a scenario we've all heard before. And boy, it can lead to some problems, can it? Wally, what do you think?
Well, certainly can. Obviously, with the little bit of time this pilot has in this airplane, he's clearly not ahead of it mentally. And starting the descent into a complicated airspace like this is a real challenge. You just simply can't be behind your airplane. You must be ahead of it. And I think he bit off more than he should have with doing this single pilot and not having a mentor with him.
And let's talk about situational awareness. We know, you know, in an Cessna 150, we have to know, you know, where we are and what's around us that might get us in trouble. Well, this guy's in complex airplane, moving fast, falling further and further behind. I mean, how many straws do you drop on the camel's back before the camel's on its knees? Jeff, what do you think?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And I think the situation here, particularly, there's no easy out. Right? There's no easy way to bail out of that situation. There's no place to go to slow down. I mean, that's kind of the situation you run into in so many places. You could ask for a hold. You can ask to step aside. Man, you try and pull that here. I don't even know what they're going to do. And so, you know, that gets back to knowing the situation you're getting into. And before the arrival's begun, knowing that you're ready and you get your ducks in a row for arrival. And I think it, Bob's point is really one of the best ones I've heard. This is a crew environment. Like the procedures, what ATC expects, the aircraft itself to a degree. Operating in that environment is designed around people working together.
And I don't think, given that you could over-prepare for this. The time to look at this route, you're going to know virtually before you take off what route you're going to get. I mean, there's many different ways of doing it. You can look at any of the online tools or something. So this MAISY 2 shouldn't be a surprise. And maybe the time to look at that is on the ground before you even take off, mentally fly it and say, okay, I'm coming, you know, I got a west wind, I'm coming down out of 250 or whatever it is, and walk yourself through how you're going to set this up. And that goes back to training. You can't even overtrain for something like this too. What were you doing in that sim ride back there? Were you practicing these kind of arrivals, or were you just, you know, checking the boxes on stuff?
Yeah, but then, of course, the tough part of that is you could have worked all that on the ground. I got the MAISY 2. I know what my speeds are going to be. I know where my descent is. And then you get the get ready to copy holding instructions. I'm vectoring you off. And all of that crumple, crumple, crumple is out the window. And to my mind, that's where the two-pilot environment absolutely shines. Be like, okay, you deal with this. I'm dealing with this. And, you know.
And clearly, that's where this pilot goes into overload. Too many things happening at the same time. Whereas in the two-pilot environment, clear division of duties. You fly the airplane. I'll work this out. And I'll communicate.
You know, and Tom, let me just ask you on the training issue, because I really think that's the key to this thing. If you were responsible for this guy, if this was your guy, what additional training preparation would you have mandated for him before he even thought about, you know, biting off a chunk of action like this?
Well, first, I would want to put him through some simulation. If he was going to go into the New York airspace. There are lots of tools available that he could have flown some of these procedures ahead of time before he ever flew the airplane, whether it be in a simulator training facility type thing or simply a desktop simulator where you can get a feel for knowing – just simply knowing what the intersection names are, the waypoints are. It could be very, very helpful. So not only do you have to be able to fly the airplane, and you do have to be able to fly the airplane, you have to be able to fly the airplane without thinking about it so you can focus on the airspace issues and the navigation issues and such. I think an issue, and it really even – when he was flying the Cirrus here, there's an issue that I see prevalent amongst business pilots, pilots who are flying an aircraft in the IFR environment, but that is not their primary employment. When you become a business pilot in a plane, certainly like a PC-12, you are accepting a new profession. You are adopting a new profession. Put it the other way, would this pilot's law firm expect a professional pilot to say, okay, by the way, I'm also going to litigate when I get to New Jersey? Okay? No, it's another profession. You're really accepting a new job, and it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of practice, and it takes some time when you're getting into an environment like this. It takes taking along a mentor pilot or an instructor for a few times until you can do that.
Let me just marry up to the thought that both Tom and Jeff pointed out here. The fact of the matter is, in a situation like this, you know, many times you can call a timeout, you know, slow down, you know, catch up with the airplane a little bit. New York airspace, that's not going to happen. But the beauty of Tom's thought is, in a simulator, you can do just that. You place it on hold, you take a deep breath, you know, and kind of relearn the situation. So, valuable training tool, and to not use that tool, you know, in this case, it's becoming suicidal. And how many lives could we have saved, you know, with a little reality check? I mean, this guy is clearly overconfident. Anybody ever met an overconfident pilot? I mean, we are everywhere. And you know, we're always kind of comfortable with where we are. When we get our private, pilot certificate, we think we're Sky King. Well, look back at that pilot and you know, you laugh at how silly it was to think you were a capable pilot. And that's true about all stages of our training. And here's a guy, very successful, upgrading through his airplane. He feels pretty darn good. Well, the wind got knocked out of his sails pretty fast. Wally, I think you thought there might be another option here other than the one Bob chose.
Well, yeah, Bob, I kind of wanted to go back to your analysis and talk about number two, which was descend immediately to 7,000 feet. That's clearly a legal thing to do. You would agree?
I agree. It would be legal.
And for me, I think that's the quickest solution. It's going to be pretty hard to do all this descent rate versus nautical miles. I'm not used to working in these numbers yet because I'm new to this airplane. And I think knowing that I could go down to 7,000 feet and maybe even using whatever maximum capability the airplane has to do that would solve the problem for me, and I could get down there, get leveled off, get slowed down, and handle the airplane. So I think, well, that didn't rise to your first choice. It rises pretty high in on my list.
And, you know, really, let's talk about this airplane for a second. You know, you're moving along pretty darn quickly. You know, and it's real easy to get behind an airplane like this, and it can approach dangerous levels. I mean, we're talking about descent rates. Bob talked about, you know, 1,700, 1,800 feet per minute. Well, in a controlled scenario, when you're way ahead of your airplane, you might be able to do that. But when you're chasing your airplane, very distracted, boy, I'll tell you what, you know, we're setting yourself up for a loss of control, or, you know, really busting airspace in a very, very dangerous situation. John, what do you think about that?
Yeah, 2 points on that. One, I mean, fortunately, in this case, at least it was VFR. So you're not faced with navigating through the clouds. But it very easily could have been IMC the whole way, which adds another whole level of complexity now, maintaining orientation. You don't want to get, you know, heads down, button pushing on the GPS, heads up. Whoa, where are we? But I want to go back to Wally's point about expediting the descent down to the lowest possible altitude. And I think that is something we talked about earlier, it is the only out. There's like we talked about earlier, there's lots of in other situations, there's outs. You always look for the out. I think the only out here is to get down to that 7,000 as fast as you can, level off, slow down the problem, and try and regroup. If you're screaming trying to make that crossing restriction, what are you going to do when you get there now? You got to level off from a 2,500 foot a minute descent rate, and something's going to happen after that. So the only way you can buy yourself some time is, I think I kind of agree with you, is get down as quick as you can right away and forget about the crossing restrictions and stuff.
Well, one of the things that several of us has used the very term, slow down the problem.
Yeah.
Slow down the airplane. Yep. As far as we know, there has been no speed restriction placed on this aircraft here. And if he could pull 30 or 50 knots off of the ground speed, that's going to phenomenally improve decrease the descent rate required to make the restriction. It's going to probably fit better into the ATC world because he's much more likely to make that restriction. And then if he gets told to speed up later on, he's already got the descent taken care of. So slowing down the airplane could be a significant could create a significant improvement in the scenario.
That's a good point. Slowing down always buys you more time. However, in this situation, you might immediately get a comeback from ATC.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Because there's a guy right behind you.
Yeah.
Right.
Approximately the same speeds, turboprop airspeeds.
Right. And that's where I think it comes to the point about understanding these procedures, which you had talked about in your response. While I agree with Wally that there's nothing wrong with number two technically about trying to get down to 7,000 and level off, I think probably more helpful is to really understand the concept of the arrival and the numbers that matter. I mean, this plate is covered with numbers. But in a sense, if you really understand it, what matters are those mandatory altitudes. And even if you have to, you know, circle them in red for yourself on your iPad or whatever it is and be like, okay, the stuff that really matters, unless they tell me otherwise, it's, you know, 60 at 7,000. And when I get direct 60, that's all I need to worry about. 60, 7,000, and it's my discretion to get there. But that requires both the preparation on the plate and really understanding arrivals and departures, which I'll freely admit, like, terrify me. It's just not something I commonly do, you know, is that kind of thing. So just like you, I would feel utterly intimidated by this situation.
Absolutely. And when we developed this scenario, we were actually – the way we developed it with the vector off and the hold and then proceed – onto the arrival again, we were unsure ourselves. We had to be certain that we understood what the rules were on this. It's very complex. You've got to have some background in it. And when you're, even if you understand it and you're flying single pilot, trying to review that in your mind as the situation develops and fly the airplane, I just find that just beyond the pale.
How many pages did it take the NBAA to explain these procedures?
Like 100?
Well, there's 100. Yeah. There's 100 pages, but that does include SIDS as well.
Yeah,
but
your reference is, oh, I'll look on page 77.
Yes. So that gives you an idea of how complex this is.
This is
so
not a simple subject.
If you're going to operate in this environment, you need to have the appropriate training background. And if you've got two pilots, you've got a chance to noodle this out and say, okay, here's what we do.
And the other thing, let's talk about the human computer for a second. When you have a question on your mind, and several times as this guy was flying this thing, he had questions, you know, and when your mind is focused on that question, it is using up, you know,
enormous amount of
ability that you need to, you know, to filter elsewhere.
Yeah, so the central processing unit is going into overload.
It really does. And you're just falling further and further behind. So asking a relevant question with ATC. Remember, we're partnering with ATC. And so you're afraid to ask the dumb question and get yelled at by New York ATC, which they occasionally do. But the fact of the matter is, until you get that question resolved, you can't start moving forward. And you need to free up, you know, the capacity that you're wrapping around with questions. So, I mean, a lot of that will be resolved with good planning. I absolutely agree. But once you have failed to plan, you're now in this environment, and it's in everybody's best interest, yours and ATC, that you work together. So effectively communicating with ATC, hey, you know, I have a question here, and can we resolve that, or can you help me here?
Yeah, and I think what's going to happen is there are going to be more and more situations like this, not just for people coming in out of the flight levels into busy airports. You know, as we have more navigation that's dependent on RNAV, more sophisticated procedures that the navigator has to fly, this is going to become more and more a part of instrument flying, absolutely, and possibly all flying.
This is another area that you bring up, you know, questioning ATC on this. It's maybe John could comment on this. ATC does have an expectation that you understand what you're doing. If you question them relative to altitude, I would expect they would just rapid fire back to you, descend via the SID, you know, and not give you any additional information.
Well, this was actually a very big issue with ATC, and that's what resulted in several work groups over the last 2 years after these procedures, because the controllers didn't understand it any better than the pilots. And there was a lot of confusion on both sides, and it took a concerted effort from NATCA, from the Controllers Union, from the NBAA, the FAA, to many work groups to figure this out, because controllers were also guilty of misapplying some of these procedures too. So it was double confusion. And I think they finally got their side straightened out through a lot of work on all these groups. But exactly your point, that they're now programmed, I think, to expect the pilots to be able to comply with this. And, you know, it's frequency time is what it comes down to. If you got to read every pilot all the altitudes, you've defeated the whole purpose of
this CAN procedure.
Yeah, right. But they should be able to help you reiterate what you're supposed to be doing at that point.
Bob, you really uncovered some tremendous issues here that require some serious attention on the part of any pilot that is planning a flight like this, and the amount of planning, preparation, and forethought that goes into it to avoid a serious disaster.